Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show. It's the middle of October, the budget has been delivered, so the autumn is well and truly with us. Shout out to our supporters, Arnua, the European Milk Forum, Grassland Agro for helping us make this happen. In a minute I'm going to talk to Adam, Darren and Aidan, but before that, as per normal, we'll start with the quick fire buzzer round, so let's get straight into it. Remember, email your questions to farmtechtalk at farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 086-836-6465. Adam, two quick ones for you. First one in, what are good strong suckler cows making this week?
Good strong suckler cull cows, Jack.
Looks like, sorry, so goose around stuck for cull cows. Yeah,
that's yes, it is, cull cows. Yeah. You're probably up, but they've held quite well. Maybe cow prices in the factories came back a wee bit, but it's more for that pea grade cow and that dairy cow that prices back. Good suckler cows still very good in the factory, €3.94 a kilo, which is a carcass weight. And that's transpiring back into €2.10, €2.20 for those top cows. Maybe even a little bit more for a younger cow, but definitely over the €2 a kilo. Maybe for the plainer cows, you're back at a €1.70 or €1.80.
Okay, ask Adam, would he buy suckler replacements in the mart? And if so, what would you be looking for? So if you went to buy a replacement heifer in the mart, Adam, what are you looking for?
Look, Jack, I suppose there's two trends of thought there at the moment. You've this maybe high-end stuff in terms of a Belgian blue heifer. I'm not into that at all. I'd rather maybe that good sort of an R-grade heifer, maybe Simmental Limousine showing signs of milk, a nice maybe feminine, something feminine about her, Guys go out maybe and buy these big muscly, I will say Belgian blues. There's Belgian blue in a lot of those muscly heifers. Mm. And really, it's a top-end game. It's possibly a C-section. Now, the guys that are at it maybe get on very well at it, but it's not for everybody. So I'd be looking for something like an R-grade heifer that when you put a good bull on that heifer, she'll come into a U-grade animal in terms of breeding up again. And that's maybe there's less hassle with that in terms of running, maybe higher numbers.
Okay. Darren, two quick ones for you. I've store lambs, 35 to 40 kilos and stronger, older grass. Would they need a shake of oats to keep them going?
Yeah, Jack, probably. Look, you'd be talking about from now on, grass utilization will probably drop. I know it's good this week. But if they're on older grass, the performance of them is going to be poor. They're a long way behind. I suppose, they're a long way light. It depends on when he's targeting feeding them, but I would be bringing in a small bit of feed to keep them, keep performance up.
Okay, we might come back to it later on the show. Is it too late to buy store lambs now, and where is the value?
Nope, not at all, Jack. I suppose the value at the moment is probably in your long keep lamb. Some would argue the value isn't in them because of concentrate costs have gone up. Mm. But the short keep lamb at the moment, there's a lot of people wanting them just to eat off grass. So that's sort of 40 to 45 kilos. There seems to be big demand for them. The longer keep lamb probably looks like a better bet. But they're still dear as well, Jack.
And when you say longer, you mean that 30 kilo or less even in terms of that longer keep lamb. That's what you have to, yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. 100%, Aaron, back to you in a bit. Aidan, I've only the one quick fire for you. Would Aidan still use antibiotics in dry cows, even if not milk recording? We don't have any mastitis during the year.
I'd be very slow to, Jack. I mean, those practicing selective dry cow therapy, when they're using milk recording, they tend, you know, the top performers in that area tend to use antibiotics in probably 20% of the herd. So, you know, 80% of cows will just get sealer. But those 20%, you know, they're an important cohort. They have an infection and they need to be cured, even if there's no mastitis or clots in the herd, in the filter, or, you know, mastitis appearing throughout the lactation, or even if cell count is pretty good, like, so, you know, in around 100, you would be very slow to anything over than that. Look, depends on the herd size and the amount of labor available. I'd be inclined to CMT test the cows. If they're, you know, if they are good and you have good, yeah, good dry period, good conditions dry period, I'd CMT test the cows and treat ones that are high.
See what you pick up. And as you say, if they're managed well over the winter, you might get away with it. But milk recording, as you say, is essential if you want to get more into it. Back to you in a shout, Aidan. Adam, looking at you, budget reaction. Talk to me. Like, it's all about budget, obviously, this week, Adam. What has been the kind of the early reaction? Like, it's obviously only a couple of days since we heard the kind of the scheme rollovers, etc. But talk to us in terms of what beef or suckler farmers are saying.
I suppose it's mixed, Jack, to be honest. I suppose there is a cohort of farmers out there saying it's positive to see those schemes rolled on. But we sort of knew those schemes. It'd be a big own goal for the government if they didn't roll on those schemes like BDGP and BPS. And there is some frustration out there, I guess, among some farmers that there isn't, you know, maybe any innovation or change or new ideas. Some thought that you might have had a couple of pilot schemes rolled out next year in 2022, a chance to roll those pilot schemes out for 1 year to see how they go before CAP comes in 2023 and maybe roll them out in a bigger way in 2023. Look, it's a pretty benign budget, Jack. There's nothing new in here. And I guess around that carbon tax, we've been promised that that wasn't going to be et into by other sectors, and we're seeing 50 million of it straight away going across to the Department of Social Protection.
That's probably one of the biggest cuts to the, you know, that's probably one of the biggest kind of unknowns that came out of, that hit farmers. Like, I mean, that's 50 million effectively taken out of the kind of farmers' pockets to an extent, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, Jack. And that could have been filtered into maybe a slaughter premium, or the IFA were looking for a store to finish a payment that might take the pressure off beef price next year. Just again, before CAP, a chance to roll out something like that, something new. And look, it's a little bit worrying to hear, obviously, it was in the paper about those schemes, that some of the extra elements as part of BPS, namely the fecal sampling, that could be gone in next year's scheme. And that money is headed towards multi-species swards and maybe the biodiversity measures and maybe soil sampling. And that's not good to see that money sort of coming back again. They're very important schemes to suckler farmers. And look, we're sort of taking a punt on these multi-species swards, Jack. I don't know of any research in Cavan or in the Northwest as regards multi-species swards. We've lots of species up here, but it's rushes and heather on a lot of farms. And in terms of putting that in on farms up here, I really don't know, Jack. We're taking a big punt on that one.
Yeah, there's definitely something. There's very little done on the persistency, you know, in terms of will they last, will they not mind for the last in Cavan or not, like, you know. But yeah, definitely. Now, I look at, for me, it's a bit of a kite that was kind of raised. Like, it's only a million, isn't it? It's small beer. We'll talk to Darren in a bit more on it in a minute. Adam, talk to me quickly here on the Tullamore Bulls. You have a nice piece, like we'll say, I suppose looking at what the kind of kill out of the various breeds were like, and like give us a flavor for kind of what kind of results you're seeing.
Yeah, I suppose, Jack, to take a step back from this, look at bulls, there was a big question over bulls in 2021. If we go back to summer 2020, factories were advising farmers that they weren't going to be positioned to kill bulls in 2021. And we've seen a huge drop in the bull kill. You know, up to this point in 2020, we'd up on 180,000. We're down to something like 98,000 up to this point in 2021. So farmers did take out the Bordizzo and they castrated a lot of bull calves. Thank God we didn't on Tullamore, because our bull price, we never had a better year. It's actually our best year yet on Tullamore. We're up 282 euros ahead on the 2020 price. Our average bull price for 2021 was 1,666 euros. That's on a U equals 3 minus carcass. It's on a 384 kilo carcass. And look, I suppose numbers are small, and I know you know, the research heads will say, well, look, you can't make comparisons with this, but just it's nice to look across the farm. We used a couple of different breeds. We used Simmentals, Limousines, Charlies, Solaires, and Aberdeen Angus. Charlies coming out on top at 715 euros, just pipped the Solaires actually at 1,713 euros. The Sementals actually finished the quickest. Charlies and Limousines were 10 days later at 466 days. And actually, the Solaires were the latest to finish of all. So really interesting. And we look back across the last 4 years, Jack, our bull price in 2018 was 425 a kilo. 2019 was 350 a kilo. 2020 was 370 a kilo. And we're back up to 433 for 2021. So look, it's a nice read. Looking back across the few years as regards what's changed. I suppose the one concern factor for 2022, Jack, we're going back at bulls again, but it'll be meal price. Meal price coming in at 400 euros there at the moment as regards that bull system. That's going to be up 60 or 80 euros ahead probably for 2022. But I still think we'll be better off doing bulls without a doubt.
Yeah, I hear you. And we've had a row before about this. Like, I mean, if you had castrated them, your steers would probably still not be finished. You'd probably still have them. You'd still be feeding probably to an extent, Adam, is it fair to say? And you'd be looking at them for another kind of 3 months of a kind of a costly period.
We would, Jack, and I know 2022 is a long way away, but I was just thinking when I was writing this story this week, if we're looking at, I heard a price this week of 500 for a euro a ton for can, 700 for protected urea. Yeah. If we're looking at next spring in terms of, you know, making silage on dry stock farms, could bulls be used as an option maybe to keep those bulls in and reduce your grassland stocking rate? You could be better feeding meal at 300 a ton than buying fertilizer at 700 a ton. But anyway, that's a long way away, and maybe we won't get to that.
But it's going to be a big issue, you're right. Like, and I think we'll cover it off in the next couple of weeks in terms of a kind of a prediction of costs and where they're going. I think we should do a couple of case studies and have a chat about them in terms of looking at that next spring, because that's a game changer, as you say. If you're looking at 700, even to get it, they say availability of urea is going to be an issue, but even to get it, you might be paying 700. So there's going to be big challenges there, as you say, for your side of the house. Adam, the heifer sale in Tullamore, when are you selling them?
Yeah, so 27th of October, Jack, we're just getting ready down there. Catalogue going to print at the end of this week. We'll have a digital version ready, we'll say early next week. So I guess 2025 in-calf heifers, there's a couple of maidens in it. And look, at a really, really good batch of heifers. The index is up close to 200 euros for some of them, calving all in January and February, vaccinated BVD, lepto. And look, at this is our harvest, I suppose, this time of the year. That's the system we've employed down there. And look, we're looking forward to it.
Now, Adam, they're a different animal to kind of, you see some kind of promotions there for heifers that, like, there must be 30 months or more, like, you know, super looking animals altogether, like, you know, the kind of way, the real job, the real deal. Like, I mean, yours are only babies compared to them, like.
That's all, I suppose, Jack. Look, we want to calve a 2 year old. Chagas research has shown in the past that that's the most profitable time to calve. Now, look, maybe if you're buying in those heifers, you don't have to calve them a 2 year old. But look, it's good for the industry to move that way. We're very, very slow to move to calving heifers a 2 year old. And look, I suppose the proof is in the pudding, Jack. If we go back across the last number of years, the heifers have went out to farms. Those farmers are coming back looking for heifers. So people have said 2 year old calving doesn't work and it'll stunt the heifer and she won't go back and calve. For these farmers, it's obviously working. So every one of them is calving a 2 year old. There's none of them over that.
Okay, and that sale will be online, will it?
Martbids.ie. It's in Roscrea Mart, 8 o'clock. And look, at anybody, I know that there's probably people watching in that maybe want heifers, and we'll welcome them to Tullamore Farm anytime between now and the 27th of October, and they can go back and sit on their couch and press away at the phone on the night. You can view the heifers on the farm and bid online after.
Okay, get a cup of tea. Trivox coming up. Adam, talk to me.
Yeah, so the 28th and 29th of October, Jack, we're heading to Kerry, to John Brosnan's on the 28th of October, Thursday the 28th, and we're heading back up to Roscommon to the Murray Farm on the 29th of October. And look, these are sort of an update on where we're at on these farms. There's a lot of grass on both farms, and we expect calves to be still out. So again, managing that and what we're going to do, and I suppose a little bit of nutrition for the winter, a little bit on dosing for the winter as well, and we'll have an update on John Halley's farm in Cashel as well for anybody that wants to come. So again, loads of visuals on the day. It's not just boards. We'll be looking at stock and looking at sheds and how they're set up and how that dairy beef system is performing on those farms.
Okay, nice one. We'll finish up with the cattle trade. Adam, any big moves?
No, we're pretty steady, Jack. A lot of cows coming out down south off dairy farms, you know, maybe bear cows with cow killers up 900. Actually, prime cattle killers down 1100 for the last week. And beef prices pretty steady, 420, 25 for heifers, 1520 for bullocks. Everything pretty steady, kill at 36,000. We're not seeing any huge change in that. Hopefully, we won't see a change for the next couple of weeks. A lot of cattle housing in the northwest. It'll take another 3 or 4 weeks for those cattle to come back out. And weather conditions in the south are actually pretty good. So there's no big pressure there to offload cattle. So I don't see any big bumps on the horizon for the near future.
No, and milk price is good. So there won't be too many cull cows coming out too soon, you would expect. Like, yeah. Adam, thanks for that. Rock and roll. Darren, in terms of the budget, I mean, I touched off it there with Adam briefly. Like, I mean, we just mentioned the multi-pieces thing. I mean, it really is a kind of, I call it, you know, it's a small piece, but it's kind of a noisy piece because it's like, there's not much behind multi-species, as Adam said. There hasn't been much research done on it. There's very little in terms of persistency. I know there's been a piece on the sheep side done with a few years, but talk to us on that piece.
Yeah, Jack, it's something to look at. It's, I suppose, it's strange. And this follows on. It's not just, say, the multi-species thing in the budget on its own. Multi-species were the biggest element of, say, REAP for dairy farmers or for more intensive farmers. So there's a lot of credence and a lot of faith being put in multi-species forwards. And like, if I've heard Minister Pippa Hackett say once that this is going to be the answer to rising fertilizer costs or reducing fertilizer costs, I've heard this 10 times. Like,
yeah.
And like it's disappointing. I heard there recently that Chagas, UCD, CAFRE were coming together and had put a research proposal in around multi-species forwards and it wasn't funded. Like, there has been bits and pieces done. There's a bit in Johnstown Castle, there's a bit in Athenry, there's a bit in UCD. And all of them, Jack, would definitely show that, look, there is potential for improved animal performance.
Yeah.
But the biggest question mark in each of them has been persistency, that they have, say you'll get a boost in year one, that boost will probably carry you on average over year one and year two to show that there's a statistical difference. But then after that, you're, I suppose, clutching at straws in this. Do you go back in and try and stitch them in? Do you plow up again? And that's the question mark. Now, look at
we're not knocking them at, it's fair to say, Darren. You know, I mean, we're not knocking it, but we're kind of saying, I suppose, in terms of a budget and locking on to something that's kind of proven, that's research-based. Like, lime and clover are two that have, you know, I know we row about clover every now and again, but lime and clover are two that you can bank on to in a certain extent.
That's exactly. And look, we know there are farmers who are, say, maybe honed in and manage it because it's a whole different management system. Siobhan had a piece, Siobhan Walsh, a few months ago, a farmer, I think it was in Carlow, and he was used to managing them in an organic system and he was getting good results. But he was going in at whole different, say, grazing heights. He was going out at different post-grazing heights, the same as what, I suppose, in New Zealand and Australia, where they might be going in at maybe 20 centimetres and coming out at 10 or 8 centimetres. Yeah. And that's where the research needs to be done in this, like, this, I suppose, this signals that this is going to be big in the next round of CAP or maybe in the future, or that maybe there's going to be a lot of credence put on it in trying to reduce fertilizer inputs. And it may well be that this is the answer for some farms. But Ginny, you're basing a lot there without the research. And I think there needs to be a push to get more research done or more demonstration farms set up and more information out around how you manage them before this is rolled out in a big basis, because there will be yield implications on the milk side or say production side. So all of that needs to be teased out as well.
Darren, I mean, the big one is that the schemes were rolled over and there's 630 odd million there that's kind of rolled over that was paid out this year is going to be rolled into next year. Like, that's positive. But yet we see a lot of the farm organizations, IFA, ICMSA, NHFA, have come out kind of negative to the kind of to the whole piece, I suppose, around the budget, saying that there's kind of a lost opportunity, static, boring, you know, nothing really in it to kind of, given the crossroads that farming is at in terms of the carbon piece, in terms of the, I suppose, the environmental piece, the climate change piece, like, you know, that there hasn't been much to drive it on. Like,
no, like, if we leave aside, look at the farm orgs, we're looking for an increase in ANC payments, looking for an increase in the suckler cow payment, an increase in the O payment. That's one element, say, I suppose, NIM schemes. And it's disappointing that say, something didn't come. Look, I should mention that it was positive that the sheep welfare scheme, the reference year, has been updated from 2014, 2015 to 2017.
So that's effectively allowing in more yours into it, is it?
Exactly. So you'll bring in about, it'll increase the budget by about $2.5 million. So that in itself is say, an improvement. But the other things, say, haven't. But, like, if you look at the direction of travel, Jack, and the signals, like, there's been 5 million for organics, there's been 5 million for biodiversity, there's another 5 million into the soil sampling. Like, none of them things are, I suppose, maybe going to deliver. Yes, they will deliver important information for farmers. But as you said, in an era where farmers are being asked to do more, and being asked to switch their systems, you would have hoped, and I think this is what farm organisations are disappointed about, is that you would have hoped for something, say, more innovative. Like last year, we got REAP, which was good to see because it tests out results based teams and how that's going to work in the future. Because look, there's going to be a push to that way, whether we like it or not. But like even on the organic side, you could sort of question around the whole area. There's like Minister Hackett is I think Pat O'Toole was in at the brief and said that she's committed to get to the 7.5% of utilizable say farmland in Ireland being organic over the next 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Like where's the market piece around that? Yeah. Like because it's one element, say, going in and switching to organics and getting, say, I suppose, maybe supported from the government side of things. But if there's no market for that, like the two of them need to work hand in hand. And I think there is a lot of bigger picture things that need to be questioned here around carbon, around soil sequestration, all of that side of things.
Yeah.
Look, the soil sampling is good in that regard, and at least we're getting baseline figures. But Ginny, if you look at the whole, I suppose, maybe for all around forestry, and it was brought up again, this 100 million put forward for forestry, like how much of the 100 million have we spent in recent years? And it, to me, it's going to take a lot of work to try and regain farmers' interest in forestry. And like, would they be better off in bringing in a broadland, a native broadland scheme? Would they be looking at agroforestry? Because the current system of coming in with large tracts of sickle spruce, it's broken. Yeah. Like Adam has talked about that before,
right,
of what it's done in Leitrim. I know from home as well. You know, Jack, more so than anything else. Like, but there needs to be a bit of fresh thinking. I think, look, that's probably what everyone was happy to see the schemes rolled over. And look, we know that they're an integral part of family farm income. But I think people bemoan the fact that there wasn't something outside of the box thinking and something new to the table.
Something to trial. And I mean, the Brexit adjustment, reserve again, it looks like farmers are losing out on that one, Darren. Like, you know, there's been no, I suppose, policy or no kind of innovation around trying to kind of maybe capture some of that. Like, and if that has to be spent by 2023, which I think it has, like, you know, farmers potentially, that pot could be empty by 2023 by others, we'll say. It could be emptied by others, and there might be very little left in it for farmers.
Oh, definitely, Jack. And look at the, like that's an area where, particularly on the beef side, also on the cheddar side, like we need to be looking at how we safeguard the markets. Like, look at, we even see at the moment that, say, the UK are talking on the sheep side, say, with Irish factories here, because there's going to be less New Zealand sheep meat coming into the market short term. Like we know from the past, the UK, or I should say Britain, because there is a cheap food policy there, and there's always been a legacy of providing food, making sure their population has food, making sure that they have healthcare, and making sure that there is, say, a good industry there. Now, look, they're not going to sit around and say dilly-dally and not go and look at other trade deals on the beef side. So we need to safeguard that. We need to safeguard the markets that's there. And there needs to be, I suppose, maybe action on that that farmers can relate to and that's transferable back to farm gate.
No, definitely. I mean, and we saw Dalem has an interview there with the Minister for Agriculture from New Zealand. Like, they're very close to signing up a deal there with Britain again on I suppose a trade deal, which again will undermine, I suppose, the beef market for Irish produce into that market. Darren, in terms of other money pieces that we should flag up, the BPS, that's due to start flowing into accounts when, soon enough.
Yeah, Monday, Jack. And in fairness, look at, we're after, I suppose, maybe, I won't say we're bashing the department, we're constructively discussing the budget. They have been good in recent years on scheme payments. Payment. And looking in fairness, like if we look across Europe, they have delivered, and I would suspect they will deliver again on Monday, that there will be a big cohort of payments. Last year, I think there was something like 118,000 farmers got the advance. There's 122,000 eligible farmers, or 123. Okay. So I think that, look, we can look forward to a good advance being paid out again on Monday, and that should hopefully alleviate some of the pressures at farm level and get some, say, I suppose, money flowing for the back end of the year. ANC, Jack, twice weekly payments going on, roughly around 2.3, 2.4 million being paid out. about 800 or 900 farmers getting it on a weekly basis. Thames as well, about 1.3 million being paid out, are sort of somewhere between 130 and 180 applications. I should make just one mention, Jack, if you'll permit me, on this. Tranche 23 of Thames is closing on the 5th of November. So for somebody that has to get an application in and there's bit, maybe a bit of work, contact your advisor now. Tranche 24 is opening on the following day, the 6th of November, closes, I think, on the 14th of January. It's the 10th or the 14th of January, and there will be more tranches after that. But it's just to, I suppose, maybe get your ducks in a line.
Okay. Two quick ones, Darren, to finish off. We talked a lot about budgets, getting back into the fields in terms of grazing. Like, it's the kind of time of the year that I suppose guys maybe can offload, you know, lambs or sheep into other farms or where there is grass, etc., and that kind of thing. I mean, is there much of that happening this year? Like, I mean, as Adam said, there is plenty of grass in places, like, and stock are going to be out, especially sheep, as we said before, out going a little bit longer. What are lads paying for that type of grazing, or what way is it working?
Yeah, it's funny, Jack, because we talked about this last week and I had a piece of management notes, and it's probably, I got more calls starting off earlier this week, and a lot of them from beef farmers wondering, say, do they buy store lambs or do they offer grazing up? And it's like, I gave a ring around, I was talking to a good few jog advisors that would be sort of handling them sort of situations, or would be, I suppose, maybe on the ground with farmers and some of the private consultants as well. And the amount of deals done so far isn't, I suppose, maybe high. There's some deals for lambs going in around 5 or 8 in today. Some deals for yours going in around 50 cent a week, because it's early yet. They're sort of short term deals. We haven't seen more of the longer term deals that would generally be done around 70 cent to euro a week for yours. They generally would start probably November, because it's November, December, January type of thing. There is also, Jack, some deals being done, and it's more than I probably thought of. Farmers say they have a small area of ground that is gone very strong on grass, but haven't, I suppose, don't have the interest in coming in buying store lambs, or else they've looked at the budgets, they don't look that favourable, and just want a farmer to come in, put up temporary fencing, graze it off, and be gone again in 3 or 4 weeks. Yeah. And in most of them cases, Jack, there's a negligible money change in hands, if any at all, because what you're seeing is some of the sheep farmers still have a bit of grass, and they're more looking for grazing for October, November, December type of thing. It's not that attractive to come in and put up with Vincent. Yeah. Well, look, there's always someone there that'll do it if for that short-term thing. But it's I suppose, realising on both sides the value of what the grazing is to a sheep farmer, but also what the work involved and what it entails.
Yeah.
Look, the one message I'd have, Jack, on any of them systems is, we talked last week about paperwork. In some cases, there's no paperwork needed with the department, but I'd still have a bit of, whether it be paperwork or word of mouth or something, and it's set out at the start around exactly how long the sheep are to be in for the graze, who looks after the fencing, and who checks them daily. Yeah. And the first one of them is the one that causes the most hassle. Even Adam joked about it last week, or sheep coming in and not coming out for Christmas.
Yeah.
But like, just clarify them, because genie, it saves a lot of hassle down on them.
Yeah, and keeps everyone going together. Last one, Darren, is there still a good price for lambs, we'll say? Are they killing out well at the moment?
Yeah, Jack, lamb kill out is still very variable. And I think some of that is coming to what you said there about strong grass covers, maybe grass, maybe more credence being put into quality than what is actually there, and not as many fellas feeding. So some fellas are killing away and very happy with kill out. Factory agents were telling me on Wednesday that some very disappointed in what way lambs are killing out, and anywhere from sort of 40-41% for ram lambs with not a lot of feeding up to the general of 44-45%. So I think, look, it's just something to be cognizant of for farmers to weigh, send a selection of lambs, and if there is lambs killing poorly, to look at maybe it might be better to feed or to show them in the storing, because there is that right good bit of trade. Looking at prices, Jack, prices were very strong at the start of the week, probably steadied as the week went on, and anywhere from 6.30 to 6.45 is catching a lot of lambs. There is prices back to, I suppose, 6.20, 6.25 a kilo for lower numbers or less negotiating power. The other thing to be cognizant of, a lot of factories have moved to 22 kilos now. The two ICM plants are say, fully at that, but there is differences between other plants. And like one calculation I did with a farmer this week, he was just looking around whether he go to the mart, go to the factory, and what factory he go to. Is he was being offered 6.25 a kilo in one factory, 21.5 kilos carcass weight. He'd have to travel to go to the other factory, but he was being offered 6.40 a kilo, 22 kilos, and a 6 euros lamb, Jack. And that's significant over a bunch of lambs.
Over a bunch of lambs if you've gone 25 or 30 in the trailer. Yeah, exactly. Like, excellent, Darren. We leave it there at that for this week. You had a chat earlier with Michael Murray from ESB Networks. We'll pick that up later in the show. Okay, Aidan, looking at you. I mean, again, maybe just to start off where we finished on the quickfire. I mean, that farmer that sent in the question there about he's not milk recording, but he's wondering about drying off cows and using tubes. You know, I mean, it's a big one. It's a big chance to take if you have no information, Aidan. You know, to go without antibiotics.
Yeah, you're really shooting in the blind, Jack. Like, and I mean, to be honest, like roughly half the cows in the country have been milk recorded, so the other half aren't being milk recorded. And like it's a big issue now because from next year on, selective dry cow therapy is mandatory. So you won't get the blanket antibiotics as you would have ordinarily, like, you know. So this is the last year that's allowed. So a lot more farmers won't have to milk record, even if it's only in the last, you know, the last application, but like, or the last round, you know, which is probably from now on, most people will be booking in their milk recording. So it is going to be a real issue. If you're not milk recording, you know, you have a huge knowledge gap.
Aidan, again, we mentioned with the other two lads in terms of cull cows, like we'll say, because they're obviously interested in the impact it's having on their market. But I mean, guys are beginning to kind of, I suppose, get a handle on what cows are not in calf, where grass supplies are, and I suppose tidying up now so that the king can maybe reduce the stocking rate for the back end. Like, I mean, it's you're well into your last rotation on most of your lads now, are you?
You are, Jack. Yeah, you're well into it. Like, the start of October really is where most people will be aiming to have their last rotation starting. Look, September, I should say, was a brilliant month. And most farmers, you know, selling cull cows wasn't on the radar at all. Loads of grass was built up on the majority of farms. But then the first week of October was poor. Look, at the last week has been brilliant. The forecast from now on, though, is mixed again. Like, so I'd say next week you're going to see a lot of the farmers, you know, grass going to run out. Some people talking about housing cows at nighttime. So there's a month left in the grazing season for the majority of farmers. And I'd say the focus now will come on to selling cows. I'm getting a bit more questions around it in the last couple of days, even what the value of them are, or whether should milk them or sell on. And you mentioned milk price earlier on, like it's a big factor, you know, if you're getting, you know, 40 to 44, 45 cents a litre for your milk, depending, you know, because you've got high solids. And meal is costing whatever, 300 euros a tonne or thereabouts, you know, like the dynamics of it are all changing based on those different prices. But the one thing I will say is that, like, if you're fairly highly stocked and grass is scarce, or even if you're not highly stocked and grass is scarce and you're having to feed a lot of meal, effectively those cull cows, those 10 or 12 or 15% of the cows you have in your farm that are empty and won't be there next year, they're nearly all being fed by ration. So the value of their milk, whatever it is, if they're making 6, 7, 8 euros in terms of milk yield per day, you know, you need to work that against all the ration. So 18, 19 kilos of ration, you know, obviously they're not eating it, but effectively they are eating it, because if you look at all the feed going into the herd and work it out that way, I mean, they're probably, you know, the cost of that is again, it's 5, 6, 7 euros per day. So the actual margin on those cows is quite small. On the flip side, if you have plenty of grass and you're lower stocked and you have enough grass to keep everything out until for another month and feed, you know, 1 or 2 kilos of nuts, like it's very profitable milk from those cows, so you're better to keep them.
That, like, the majority, I will say, and we won't go into that feeding space, they've enough to do, they have enough of stock on hand, and they'll try and sell off the field, out of the parlour, we'll say 800-900 euros a piece at the moment.
Roughly now. You'd probably be hard pressed to get to 900, I'd say, you know. If it was a few weeks ago, I'd say definitely. Because, you know, there was an extra few weeks of milking them. So a lot of the time, the people buying those cows now, they're actually keeping them and going to milk them on for, you know, a month or two or even longer. Milk them over to winter, whatever, that's the system that they're in. They have the silage and have the ration, and maybe they're in winter milk themselves. And then they might flip them. You know, they'll either sell them themselves in next spring or keep them off of try them off and keep them off grass next yeah. The next while. But I was more saying about the cost of it. You know, I wasn't suggesting that you should feed them. It's the cost of that extra feed is going against those cows. So that's where the economics.
You were saying be real of it. It's not just the extra cost on that proportion of cows that are going. It's every cow in the herd is as a result just getting a bit more meal, kind of.
I worked out before, Jack. If you sell 10% of your cows, there's an extra 2 kilos of grass available for every other animal that's left in the farm. So, you know, it's an important one to keep in mind.
Yeah, no, excellent. I see John Crow was down in Limerick during the week. Like, do you know that farm?
I do, Jack. Yeah, I was in that farm, I think, two or three years ago. I think he won the 2019 Grassland Farmer of the Year, the young farmer category of it. I mean, top class operators, Niall Maloney. They're milking around 170 cows, father son operation. You know, the land type is relatively good. You know, it's good. It's typical Limerick land, I would say. When it's wet, but when it's dry, it's very productive. And look, doing the simple things right, like you won't see anything special going on there, but he's measuring grass once a week. He's got a cow with a good EPI. And he gets out grass when he can, but like, you know, just sensible things, nothing major. No, I mean, it wasn't a very big farm to begin with. They got the opportunity to lease land next door to them, and that's allowed them to probably double cow numbers to where they are now. But they need to in order to get two incomes there. You know, Niall has a family himself, whatever, so needs to start off there.
Speaking of measuring grass, Aidan, you were putting that up as one of the measures in the Chagas Advisory article that I see you have this week. Like, I mean, okay, it's week two of our series on Chagas in the spotlight, and kind of, I suppose, looking at the state agency in terms of advisory and research. And you were saying that should be a barometer in terms of how advisors are measured, you know, in terms of it's not just all about how much scheme money they're bringing in or how much client fee they're bringing in. You're thinking that grass measurements and how many of their clients are actually grass measurements, that should be some of the way that they are measured.
Yeah, Jack, and I mean, I suppose the reason we're looking at it, we're not having a go at Chagas, we're not having a go at advisors and such, but like, you know, they are getting up to 180 million per year in funding from the state. So I think it's worthy of looking at, is there value for money there? And I looked at advisory this week, and look, I mean, we've been hearing for the last probably 30 years at this stage about the importance of grassland management. Well, we've always known it's important, but measuring as a tool has been on the go for about 30 years now. Yes, last year, I think it was 1,700 farmers or thereabouts measured grass more than 20 times per year. Look, the vast majority of them were dairy farmers, or 1,623 or something along those figures, measured more than 20 times per year, which is good. But it's still small relative to the overall number of livestock farmers that are grazing grass every year. And I just think it's one tool you could use to measure the performance. Maybe the performance is the wrong word, but that's what I would say. You know, it's
that the return on investment, like,
For putting those advisors on the ground, like, you know, it's a brilliant service. Like, it's absolutely brilliant in terms of the structure that they have in terms of the network of offices, the number of advisors on the ground. Okay, we could do with more of them, but the return back then for farming is, what are they doing on the ground in terms of improving the productivity of farmers? And go back 20, 30 years ago, like, the advisors were integral to the farm business. They were out visiting farms on a daily basis. Like, the Chagas advisor, typical Chagas advisor now, is more or less office-based. Okay, he or she is doing a number of discussion groups, but they tend not to, because they just don't have the time, Jack. You know, I'm not saying that they're, you know, they're deciding not to do it. They just don't have the time because their focus is put onto doing BPS schemes and TAMs and all the rest, which are also important. But like, I would question that, like, you know, that focus needs to shift. It needs to go back onto productivity. And one of those ways looking at productivity is grass measuring. The other ones is, you know, looking at the EBI, the herds that the farmers have, that their agents have or their clients have. Profit monitors, you know, in decline, no focus really on profit monitors like there was 5 or 10 years ago. The system hasn't changed. It's the same system out there now, more or less, than it was when it started. And like, it's not serving farmers really. I mean, the majority of the top farmers I know, they're not using profit monitor, they're using their own Excel-based programs.
Excel file.
That's an issue, I would say. You know, that needs investment. But it's just one of the ways. I don't want to be here having a cut off fully, but that's, you know, I would see a lot of challenges for dairy farmers, beef and tillage and sheep farmers over the next decade. You know, challenges we haven't seen in the last 40, 50 years, probably not since the war. And have we an advisory service that's now fit for purpose? Nitrogen is a big one. I mean, like huge challenges there in terms of how we're going to farm, you know, grass-based systems without the use of nitrogen. The average dairy farmer is using 183 kilos of N per hectare per year, and that's probably okay. But within that, the top farmers are using an awful lot more. And how are those top farmers going to remain profitable if they only can get away with spreading 150 or even less? You know, so there are the challenges we're facing. And look, we need the organization to step up and you know, deliver what the research findings are, extend those that knowledge out to farms, and get boots back on the ground.
Yeah, and it's not to wipe away, Chagas. You want to make them more important to the farm decisions. That's where you're coming from. It's to try and improve it based on what you're hearing from farmers, I suppose, and the feedback you're getting from being involved in that. Aidan, we were talking to the New Zealand Minister for Agriculture. I mean, just in terms of the whole balance of dairying and I suppose the trade piece with New Zealand and the EU as well, etc., and that kind of thing. But I mean, one of the things that came across fairly clear from is that there's going to be no more cows in New Zealand. Like, they've effectively, as he called it, reached peak cow, you know. So it's he'd probably say less dairy cows and less dairy farms, and, you know, more carbon farming and more other types of crops, hops, etc., and that things he mentioned, you know, and sheep and dry stock as opposed to cows. Like, I mean, that just to kind of again typifies some of that kind of crossroads that you're talking about in terms of an industry that's changing. Like, I mean, Ireland is getting there very quick as well. Like,
absolutely. And I mean, it's interesting you say that, because I know of a few farmers that are involved in farming over in New Zealand, and those businesses, they're talking about buying land to put into forestry, but they're not, you know, it's forestry in perpetuity. They never intend to harvest the trees off that. And the reason they're doing that is to offset some of the emissions that they're going to have on the dairy farms, and in effect to become carbon neutral. So that's, you know, that's the area that they're in over there. A lot of the smaller farms in New Zealand are going to be under big pressure, particularly if they're close to towns and cities, because there's a lot of urban pressure and a lot of pressure from the horticulture sector, which is very profitable, and they tend to find it easier to attract staff to work in horticulture than they do to work on dairy farms, because I suppose you don't have to pick berries or kiwi fruit, like, you know, on a Saturday or Sunday. So that's, you know, that's an issue there, that they have big labor problems, I'd say, in New Zealand, and all through the Australia is no different as well, you know.
No, exactly. And that exacerbated, I suppose, by the COVID piece where the outsiders weren't allowed in. They had, and I know, and again, I said it to the minister, like, there's a lot of Irish students, Aidan, that you'd know them as well. Like, they're, you know, bursting to get out to New Zealand and get the experience on dairy farms, etc. And that hasn't happened for the last 2 years, but the door is still closed there and looks like it's going to be closed for another while. Aidan, I think 100% leave it there for this week. We'll chat again next week. Earlier, I had another chat with, in our series, in our NDC Kerrygold milk quality series, I had a chat with Peter Hamm from Westmead. Let's have a listen. When I first kind of walked into your farm and saw what you have and saw your history before that, I mean, I'd say I was blown away. I mean, you started off, I'd say 20, 25 years ago with five sucklers and a round roof three bay shed. You've come a long way.
Yeah, that's what we had at the beginning. And I suppose bit by bit, it kind of grew. But in the meantime, like, we were working off farm at in the construction there. And that propped up the suckler enterprise. And when that business went in probably 2009 or 2010, the farm was kind of asked to stand on its own 2 feet, and it was paying a mortgage and two young kids and supporting the house and whatnot. So it was very difficult to try and get that to that.
And speaking of difficulty, Peter, like, I mean, where you started off in terms of your career, like, I mean, it was very much in the equine world. It was in you. I mean, you're a licensed jockey, like, was that kind of where it looked like where your career was going to go for a while? You were like, I mean, it was your career for a nice bit.
Yeah, look, I went down the road and riding horses. Probably, as I said earlier, left school a bit premature when I was just 15 years of age. Thought I knew it all, and it just doesn't work like that, as I learned. But we went riding horses for, I suppose, maybe nearly 11 or 12 years, and rode some point-to-points and a few bumpers and stuff like that. And, like, that's a hard life, you know. And, like, when you look at percentages, there's only a few Ruby Walshes or the boys, you know, the top men, a lot of lads there, you know, who are very good but just don't get the breaks.
Yeah. And so, and Peter then kind of taking that on, as you say, then you started getting into farming in a kind of a small way, which is a kind of a nice piece behind that as well. And you started getting into, I suppose, a beef farming piece. And then you kind of evolved, as you say, the farm then had to kind of stand on its own 2 feet financially. So you were looking at what enterprise, I suppose, could actually do that for you. Is that kind of where the kind of dairy element started creeping in?
Absolutely. Like, you know, when I made the decision that I wasn't going to give up everything that I had built, because I love farming and I like what I do. So I'd be very slow to give that away. Now, it is an option, and it could be an option for people who are in a similar situation that they want to maybe lease their farm or something like that. But I didn't want to do that. I wanted to stay farming. And then I looked at dairy, and I like cows and I like all that sort of crap. So I wanted to have a career in that job. So I contacted our local Chagas office, and Patrick Going, he was our area man at the time, and Patrick was very positive. And we started from there and got great advice, went and joined the discussion group. Even though I didn't have cows, Patrick invited me along, and you could meet everyone was so helpful. Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of a network, and you get a bit of positivity. Even if you only learned how to hang a gate different, you know, you meet and you go to, there's something different.
Yeah, I mean, you were very strong on that. Like, you know what I mean? Again, when we were on your farm, I mean, it's not every enterprise that you get such support from peers or colleagues, like we'll say free gratis or just to kind of help someone else along.
Absolutely. I think it's brilliant. Like, you know, and that's why I like to give something back as well, because, you know, there's an awful lot of unknowns. I'm no expert in dairy and I'm no expert in EBI and stuff like that. And there's two key elements, in my opinion. If you get your cow right and your grass right, enough of the rest of it will fit. But there are two key elements, I think, that you, if you don't address at the start, if you get that wrong, the deck of cards goes.
Correct. You're struggling. That's the core of the dairy enterprise here in Ireland, as we know it anyway. I mean, one of your challenges, Peter, was kind of having enough of grass, having enough of land to grow that grass, et cetera, and that kind of thing. And you've been lucky with how you've managed your business in terms of good, I suppose, good people working with you on the farm. And I suppose as people that work, you know, alongside you on the farm, whether they're people leasing your land or whether they're contract rearing, et cetera, that kind of thing. Like it's, you know, tell us about the kind of people involved in your business that are working with you on the farm and kind of adjoined or providing services to the farm.
My wife and the kids give me a great help. We have a man here on the farm as well, Declan. He's a brilliant man. Like he came to paint my mother's house 4 years ago, and he hasn't gone since. He was a painter all his life. And we were calving at the time, and he came out, and you know the way you might be stuck, said, would you stand in this gap or whatever? And he's a huge part of our business here. And like even through the co-op, we supply milk to Arrivo. They had a pilot program there where they were doing these grass pods. And Vincent Griffiths, at the time, he asked me, would I mind posting? Yeah. So we did that. And sure, Janie Mack, the amount of information I got out of it, you know, what I learned. And I suppose what reseeding and what new grass and what varieties, what that can put in the tank. I often say it, you can become addicted to growing grass. It's so rewarding. You see where.
Yeah, no, definitely. You've come from the five sucklers, the three bay round roof shed to, you have a very nice, I call it a very kind of practical setup there in terms of your milking facilities and your cubicles, etc., and that kind of thing, and your network of farm roadways, which is crucial to you, as you say, utilizing your grass piece. Like, I mean, that's where you focused on in terms of the investment, we'll say, on the farm. And you've done some real nifty little stuff in terms of sheds where you have, you know, trying to get more cubicle space, etc., and that kind of thing. You've done some kind of real innovative stuff.
Yeah, like, you know, ideal world, I'd love to have a shed that would cater for all my cows and that's penned and it's really nice. But sure, it's not, it's kind of pie in the sky, really. It costs an awful lot of money and it's a white elephant for a lot of the year. Mm-hmm. What's out in the field is the key to the profit, I think, you know. And like this year now, we'd love to go and maybe do another bit of a shed or do something like that, you know, to have a bit more room and to make life a bit easier. But what I'm going to put my money into the roadways. We're going to redress some of the roadways, rise them, and change the camber on them, because a couple of them are run maybe adjacent to a drain or something like this. Yeah. And we just put the camber the other way because all these new regulations and stuff like that. So that's what I'm kind of targeting for the buying period.
So, I mean, again, that comes back to your focus on the cows and that they're at grass 9-10 months of the year. Like, so put the investment there, that's long term, that you're getting much more return from. That's your principle. Like,
yeah. And like cows, when the roadways are good, you know, cows don't want to hang around the yard. And we focused on that. And we very little lameness, you know, look, touch wood now. And I think it does pay off, you know, because you blame cows hobbling around the place, condition score goes, you know, production, you have a visit from the hoof, and you know, all that sort of stuff. You know.
Yeah, pure hassle. And as you say, those expensive cows that you've put in place, you're not getting the return from them either. Speaking of the cows, Peter, talk about maybe just kind of how you established the herd in terms of how you kind of got started and how you came from kind of smaller numbers up to, I think you're milking 120, 130 now at the moment.
That's right, yeah. At the very beginning, I knew nothing about dairy cows. I knew what they looked like, all right, but that's about as far as EBI and all that was all to me. And so I went to Archagas man and I spoke to him and we just really trusted them and said, okay, we need to find people who are willing to sell heifers, who have surplus heifers to sell, and we'll try and build a herd. And so we approached three local farmers and we started with them and we ended up with 27 cows in year one. We had 30, but we made a mistake, didn't we? Put in cows into the cubicles, mixed the three different batches of herds, and there was always going to be a bully and frightened and whatnot, cows that sit calves. Yeah. But that was less than like at that point with 30 cows to lose three.
Yeah, 10%.
But I never made that mistake again.
Yeah. But learning on your feet as you go, like, yeah.
Like, you know, even for new entrants who are getting in, you know, buy your in-calf heifers in time. And they're coming from different groups, you know, let them get to know one another in the field, not in the sheds.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, I know. A small thing, but as you say, look at the consequence that it had on you in that early startup phase, which is when it can be very kind of impactful on the business.
Absolutely, Jack. Yeah, that's really hits you, yeah.
Yeah.
So once we started to grow grass, and once I could see what the farm was capable of, sure, I couldn't wait to get more cows, you know. And then we kind of organically grew for a year or two, and we had a few heifers and of our own that came in, which I think this is year seven, and this year is the only year I didn't have to buy in calf heifers.
Right.
And delighted, you know.
Yeah. Correct.
When you're always trying to source the best you can.
Yeah. And if you were back again, Peter, as you say, here we are now year seven. I mean, if you were back again, would you have tried maybe to buy bigger early on in the enterprise? Or is, you know, there's a financial piece at play there as well. I mean, you can't put all the money into that because you've demands on milking parlors, demands on sheds, demands on slurry storage, demands on roadways, as we've talked about, you know. So, but talk to me about that, like in terms of getting scaling up the business to kind of the cow numbers to make the business really tick.
It's a very kind of specific to what your own
circumstances,
circumstances are. My circumstances was the farm. There was a lien on the farm from my mum, and I had to borrow unsecured money, which was expensive and it was short term. And one second, there's a lad outside with a streamer. Yeah. That affecting you, Jack?
No, I think we're good. I'm okay, yeah.
No, we're grand, Jack.
So what happened was, if you have that, you see, in the background, that you have short-term borrowing, you know, high repayments, you're very limited. You can't just... You'd love, like, ideal world, throw enough money at it, and away you... That's fine.
Yeah.
But if you're limited to what you can do, I don't think I can do anything different.
Yeah, I hear you 100%. In terms of, like, you were a finalist selected by Arrivo for this national competition in terms of the NDC and Kerrygold Quality Milk Awards, Peter. I mean, the milk and parlour, how you milk, the facilities, etc. I mean, it's obviously delivering, even for, I call it, a relatively new dairy business. Like, we had farms in this competition that were 50, 60, 70 years on the go. Here you are, less than 10 years on the go, and yet you're competing, you know, at a high level. I mean, that must be kind of rewarding to know that you're kind of on the right road and that you are delivering the quality results that the kind of, I suppose, that the dairy industry needs.
Absolutely, sure. I was delighted, you know. And it's a great, you know, because I put a lot of effort into it, and I put a lot of, I suppose, well, animal welfare would be a huge thing with me. I would hate to see anything mistreated or, you know, anything yet. And I'd be kind of more or less cross with myself if I missed something, you know, even for 6 or 7 hours, I'd be there raging, you know.
Yeah.
But it's, again, Jack, it's all the little things, you know, to know your cows, if they're coming in this particular order, 10 days, you know, over the course of the 10 months, and all of a sudden this lady who normally is in the first row and she has kind of, but if you don't know your cows and if you're not there yourself and you're depending on someone else to make them, like, best will in the world, a great job there and to make your cows, but, you know, you have to you know your stock. And I think there's a level dip as well. And I know everyone is selling all these different gadgets with heat detection and with all sorts of stuff.
And a whole lot, yeah. Yeah.
We don't have any of that. I don't have any of it. I just think if you know your cows, you know their form, you know their behavior, you know, you can do a lot of it yourself. Now, I get it, lads with bigger herds, it's very hard to identify animals in maybe 300 or 400 cows. Like, you know, that's element. From where I'm, manageable.
Yeah, and look at it, I'll say you're relatively typical of where a lot of farmers are or would even hope to be, you know, in terms of scale-wise. Like, I mean, I think that's, you know, the national herd is still kind of less than 100 cows. Like, you know, so, I mean, for the majority of guys, as you say, in your opinion, they can manage, and if the stockmanship skills are there, they can manage and do a good job.
I'd love all these different gadgets, facilities and everything, and I don't have a drafting gate. I don't have any of that sort of stuff. We have kind of, it's a lot more manual, but sure, it is. All these things cost, they're for a certain select time of the year. Breeding season is a devil, like, you know, you need a little bit of extra help, but we kind of get relief milking in during the breeding season, and it might cost you €1,000, but like €1,000 wouldn't put in a drafting system.
No. And the way I see it, Peter, at some of these things is there's a kind of a wish list and a kind of a have to do list. Like, and I mean, there's a lot of stuff on the wish list, and maybe as the business develops over 20, 30, 40 years, next generations or whatever, you can do some of that stuff. But I mean, the business still has to get established first of all, and repay its debts and repay its business and start get up and going. And, you know, isn't that's the core principle of it at the start? Like.
Yeah, absolutely, Jack. You're dead right. Yeah.
Right, folks, that's it from Peter Ham. Good stuff happening up in Westmead in that dairy business. Earlier, I mentioned that Darren had a chat with Michael Murray from ESB Networks. Let's have a listen to what they were talking about.
Dare I say it, it hasn't been too busy as of yet for the ESB Networks emergency teams?
No, hasn't been too busy, thank God, Darren. You know, we've been very blessed now with the weather. It's been very calm and sunny and bright for the whole summer and into the autumn since we met you last. I suppose bit of rain last week down here in Galway, but thank God it cleared up for the couple of matches on the weekend. You know,
yeah, Michael, you do often, I suppose, one of your key messages is preparation, preparation, preparation. And that comes, I suppose, this time of the year. What exactly should farmers be looking at, or how can you say you best prepare, I suppose, to be winter safe?
I suppose, Darren, the in terms of preparing, is planning ahead, going through your site, your farm, making sure you know where all the poles are. I suppose that's what we'd be always telling guys, you know, there's poles, might be in ditch, mostly in ditch lines and stuff like that. So, you know, when you're going driving around, know where the poles are, know where the stays are in particular as well, is a big one. And I suppose coming into the winter now in the autumn, a lot of farmers will be starting to clear some hedges and that, you know, so make sure that they keep an eye out for the likes of our poles and our stays. And, you know, once you're going to, once you spot one, only cut around them with hand tools, you know, saws, and don't use machinery. And because if you catch one of the poles or even the stays, you know, you can shock the pole and that line can come down then and cause injury, you know.
We'll come back to maybe the stays in a minute, because you were telling me an interesting story beforehand. But just before we go on to it, just the whole area around trees, Michael, and overhanging branches and that. As a farmer looking, say, maybe to cut a tree or cut branches that's in the vicinity of electric wires, how, when do they pick up the phone and ring ye if they think that they're in danger of coming near the wires?
But I think there, Darren, you said it yourself, if someone thinks that any danger of a branch coming in contact with one of our wires, or if they're felling a tree, we would give the advice that it's you know, it's the falling distance of the tree plus 6 meters. But if they have any queries, or if they're not sure, don't take a chance. That's what we'd be asking and imploring people. Do not take a chance. Call ESB Networks on our queries number. You'll get it on the website. And look, we'll send a crew out to take a look and see what needs to be done. You know, if it has to happen, we can switch out lines, or if it's overhanging too much, we can get a cut, you know. So
yeah, because I suppose
call us, that's
something you're monitoring, say, as you go around and do your, say, routine cutting the hedges or that. But I suppose there's often a bit of extra growth that may not be seen, or in an area where trees might have, they may be growing up in previous years, and they mightn't be necessarily on your direct sort of lines of cutting. Like, what sort of height are for farmers that are trying to assess it? Like, I suppose they shouldn't, if there's any sort of risk, or if it's very hard to interpret if you're looking up at a tree what distance it is. The safest thing to do is call Eli. Like, there's no big issue if you call out a team and it materializes that there's no risk at all.
Absolutely. Look, call if you're unsure and you think, look, there's a branch or a limb, or the tree here is, I need to drop these bits of timber, and you're not sure, look, call us. There's no charge for us to come up and take a look and assess the situation, and we'll give advice on a case by case basis, you know. But the best thing to do is call us on our call center, and they'll have someone out to you within a day or two, you know, hopefully. Just give us, like everything, give the more notice we get, the better, you know. So plan ahead, as you were saying earlier on, Darren.
I suppose you can beat the drum with a message and try and get it across, but you were telling me about two interesting, well, I won't say interesting, two worrying cases in recent weeks where farmers came in contact with both poles and stays. Maybe just give us a flavour of the type of issues that you're getting at this time of the year. Look, I suppose tillage farmers are very busy. There's going to be a big rush before next week. Weather breaks. But I suppose some of the experience you're having.
Yeah, I suppose, look, over the last 2 weeks, I've had the very good experience and we've had the very bad experience. I suppose one of the very good experiences we have is one of our local safety supervisors noticed on one of the farming websites where an article was done where it was a lady who drives a harvester, and within the article she was giving a commentary on her day as a driving a harvester, and she said she always looks out for electricity poles and stays and all that, which is brilliant, you know, and it's great to hear our messages getting out to most farmers and most agricultural contractors and that. But I suppose then the other side of it was about 2 weeks ago as well, we had two very serious incidents down around the Kilkenny area where there was maize being cut and there was a field being ploughed, two separate jobs. And in one case, the machine caught the stay of a pole, broke the pole, and a 10 kV line came down to ground across a road. But the actual person who caused the damage never called it into our emergency number at 1800 372 999, and drove off. It was only that a member of the public, who were very thankful for, reported it in. You know, there could have been a serious incident. And similar, same within a day or two, down Kilkenny again, a farmer again caught a stay of a pole. pole broke, transformer came down onto the hedge. And again, they didn't report it in, but it was again, thankfully, a member of the public called it in. But I mean, apart from the potential serious safety implications there, I mean, one of those outages there, the one where it came down across the road, those 1,300 customers, that's businesses, houses, farms, dairies, etc., that were without power for up to about 8 hours on the day. You know, so it's a huge disruption as well to people's daily lives, as well as the safety piece, you know, and especially now people are working from home as well, depending on, you know, energy, the electricity is such a key part of working from home and driving the economy and business to more than agriculture is that, you know, it's scary to think that they didn't dial that in, you know. That's the big thing that really gets me, that they'd leave that trap for potentially for someone else, you know.
Yeah, Jeannie, so. It's a very worrying thought. This. Just maybe while we're on that, is it safer, God forbid, you hit a pole, line comes down, do you stay in your tractor? Do you leave your tractor? What's the advice around that? Or what's the safety, I suppose, maybe message?
Well, I suppose if you're, you know, if you hit the pole and the line comes down away from you and you're not that you drive, you know, move your tractor away, drive away. It's not coming down on top of you. If the line comes down on top of you, stay in the tractor. Stay in the cab. It's the safest thing to do. But in all instances, call us straight away. 1-800-372-999. Just call us. You know, don't worry about anything else about calling us. Just get us out there. And the guys we can switch out the line remotely straight away. You know, if they give us an air code or GPS, we can switch it out from our control room, you know, within a couple of minutes. We can make the area safe. And big thing then is, well, keep everyone away from the area. So don't call anyone over to give you a hand. Keep them away, stay clear. But look, if you think, geez, there's a bit of smoke coming out of this, I think that the tractor is going to go up in flames, you know, it's jump clear. So don't touch the metalwork of the tractor and the ground at the same time. Jump clear as far as you can and then shuffle away with little small baby steps until you're about 10 meters away. And that's the safest thing. And again, keep everyone clear and don't approach the vehicle, don't approach anything until ESB come and assure you that it's safe to do so. You know, we'll make sure we have the line switched out, earths put on to make sure it can't be reconnected, etc. You know, but that's the best option.
Okay. We're about 6 weeks away, I suppose, from a lot of dairy farmers drying off their cows. And that's, I suppose, a busy time as well for ESB crews. Especially in recent years, a good few upgrades taking place, a lot of rotary parlours going in, or robots going in, needing higher power lines. What's the procedure? Because I suppose now is the time to think about it. It's not the time to think about it in 6 weeks' time when you're going to need to do the change, because there is a bit of lead-in time and a bit of planning.
There is. There's a good bit of planning in any, like any bit of construction work, Darren. I suppose, look, a great upgrade we've done ourselves now in ESB Networks, like that planning for the future, is we've upgraded our website. So our website, new website was launched only a couple of weeks ago, and a key part of that is around the connections portal. So I suppose allows you to go online and, you know, fill out all the applications and, you know, track your application through to start to finish, which is great. But I suppose the first thing you need to do, any farmer when he's getting any work done like that electrically, is get your electrical contractor out there who can advise on, you know, what type of connections you need. What's the load? You know, is it a big, heavy load for a dairy parlour versus, you know, I'm just putting in a couple of sheds and it's a lower load, it's a lights and a couple of bits and pieces. So the first thing to do is bring your contractor and he'll advise you on what size of a load you would need, you know. And then you can go through that process. It's all online. It's very simple, just filling out forms and uploading some mapping data, etc. And then one of our engineering officers will go out, look at the site as it is and on the ground, and they can quote then based on how much work is involved, you know.
Yeah, Michael, good advice there. A question more often, I suppose, comes up as well, and it's not probably for an hour at the end of the grazing season. But is it the same procedure, say, applying online, that if somebody wants to just get a power supply in an outblock or land to run a temporary electric fence, or is that still possible?
Yeah, absolutely, Darren. And again, it's all done online through our website. So when you go onto our new website, there's a link up at the top called New Connections, and that will bring you to a page. Click on farming, and there's a full section for farming around, and it includes the likes of the larger connections, be it dairy farm, smaller kind of connections, maybe the likes of sheds or getting outhouses connected up. And then there's other bits then for, you know, unmetered supplies such as electric fences and lighting and stuff like that. So look, it's all there on the website, and it's very clear and it's very easy. And the beauty of it for farmers that, you know, you can track it. So once you know your application has gone in, you can track it through to completion, you know. So it's a very good resource for farmers.
I'll leave you on this one, Michael. You mentioned a good lot of rain in Galway last week, and I know too well about that, so I do. A fair bit of housing taking place along the west coast, along, say, I suppose, the north of the country. In regards to getting, I suppose, maybe doing a once-over around fuse boards, around plugs, around leads, all of that is a good idea this time of the year, I suppose. There can be little issues from things left over the summer and not used.
Absolutely, Darren. I suppose timely now with the clocks going back, I suppose we use it, so I use it myself as a great memory aid to go and check my RCD. So it's a little device on your distribution board. It's a primary, one of the primary kind of safety devices in your electricity distribution board in your house or your sheds or farms. There's a little test button. So when the clocks go change in October and they change in March, give it a test. Press the button and it should trip out. If it doesn't, call your electrical contractor, get him to come and look at it. But it's a key device in terms of making your electrical installation safe. But I suppose over the busy summer season, you know, leads can get frayed, connections can get, you know, with all the rain, maybe rain got into an outside box or something like that. It's the time to check those now before the light goes and the darker days come. And I suppose a key thing we'd be asking people as well to do is, we've noticed an awful uptake in the likes of people buying mobile generators, even be it the little small little petrol generator. And they hook, you know, with the increase in storms and working from home, people want to have this backup. So well, we have found a good few installations where people have just plugged them into the socket and off they go. But that's very dangerous. There's special, special requirements around those where you have to have a special changeover switch, so it stops the power going back onto the ESP network. So you can imagine if we did have a storm and there were lines down and someone has a small generator out plugged into their house, without that changeover switch, that power can go back onto the ESP network. So it has the potential then to cause, bring electricity out. And if there was a wire down and someone thought, oh, I'm going to move this member of the public, they could get a shock, or it can impact as well on our network technicians when they're out in the lines as well with backfeeds, you know, if they're out doing a bit of switching, it can throw everything up in a heap, but very dangerous. So I'd urge anyone who is installing one of those to make sure, again, you use a qualified, certified electrician and make sure there's a changeover switch installed. And it's the same as well when you're checking any of your domestic or farming installations, make sure you always use a qualified electrician.
Right, folks, that's it for another week. Thanks for watching, and indeed, thanks for listening. Thanks to all our specialists, and indeed to Westmead dairy farmer Peter Hamm, and of course, our chat that Darren had with Michael Murray from ESB Networks. If you want more from Farmers Journal podcasts or webinars, go to ifj.ie/podcasts or ifj.ie/webinars. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and stay farming.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.